Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK. And today we're speaking with Carrie Boron. Carrie is the KM analyst at WK Kellogg Foundation. Carrie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. So if you've listened to the podcast before, you know that I generally start by asking somebody to define KM in their world. Would you lead us off with that, please?
Yeah, I feel like I'm not that unique in that regard. You know, for me, it's about getting the right information and knowledge to the right people in the right time, in the right format, but with a heavy emphasis on ensuring that there's an equity lens throughout that whole process so that wherever someone sits in an organization, they have that same access to the knowledge and information that they need. I feel particularly strong about that given my work in the social sector and that you're trying to help these people achieve a mission, you know, for social good out in the world, be it refugee resettlement, bringing people together in dialogue to solve gnarly, you know, problems out in their communities, to helping vulnerable children thrive. So that's how I frame it.
Incredible mission. Love the work. And also, I really like the addition of those pieces to the kind of the classic definition. Right info, right time. But then you said right format. And to me, that's a little bit of the intro to where you extended it, which is that concept of equity and availability. Tell me more about that. I mean, we do work with the federal government and we talk about 508 compliance and accessibility standards, but my sense is you're going a lot further than that. Tell me what right format and equity and access to knowledge means for you.
Right. Well, I originally came from a background in communications. And so a lot to me has to do with you have to pay attention to how people absorb and learn. And everyone absorbs and learns in different ways. And so ensuring that you're delivering your content in different mediums, in different ways, video, print, using plain language, for instance, as well, all speak to the way that you're packaging it, not creating like a 50-page report. Sorry, as much as people, you know, love writing those, a lot of people don't like reading them. So what are you doing to, you know, break up that content so that it is digestible? They're really only going to take away maybe at most 3 points. So how are you going to make that happen? You know, from an equity standpoint, I think it's meeting people where they're at, like I said, you know, using different modes of, you know, communications, you know, to talk with people. Using Zoom all the time isn't maybe the best thing, you know, in a group setting, but maybe one-on-one conversations, meeting in person when we can, you know, to making sure that we're raising up the wisdom and knowledge of people all across an organization, not just leadership or the seasoned folks, which sometimes I come across. Some of the best knowledge capture interviews I've done are with people who are kind of in the bottom range, so to speak, or in the middle area. They have a lot to share. And so always making sure to raise up that information and knowledge, I think, is critical. Also, as far as equity too, you know, always asking for feedback, not rolling something out and just, you know, plugging your ears, but making sure that it's working for people. And that you're acting on that feedback. That's even more critical. You're not just going out there and, you know, collecting what the feedback is, but you're acting on it and people see that. You know, all the way to the technology, I have talked with this with a number of colleagues, how it can be a real trauma to people. And so you're making sure that you're including them from the very beginning, that you're even thinking about this particular idea or technology that's going to be tied to strategy, of course. It's not just a technology or a bauble to put out there. But you're including them all the way, letting them know what are the benefits, what's in it for them, what might be scary, and what you're going to help them get through as far as training and support and delivering on that. So those are just, I mean, some things, and you could kind of think of it as an equity checklist sometimes, just have it posted on your wall so you're mindful of that.
You know, I can, even though the podcast is just audio, we're on video now for our listeners, and I can see on your whiteboard behind you, KM strategy and plan. So clearly it is truly on your wall, and we'll get to that too. You shared a lot there, Carrie. I want to pull out a couple of these things. First, you talked about breaking up content, which is, I think, a really exciting sort of trend in the idea of where KM meets content management. We talk about deconstructing content and we talk about the dreaded double search So you search for the manual, you find the manual, and you open the manual, and then you have to search inside the manual because it's so long and so tough to navigate.
Right.
So that's a point really well taken. What are you doing at WKKF in order to address that challenge? Because that's a hard one.
Yeah. Well, myself and my colleague, Alicia Shaver, who is the Senior Knowledge and Records Analyst at WK Kellogg Foundation, we're doing a lot to create context for people for when they get to, say, a knowledge product, a resource, a training material. You know, when you get there, what's it needed for? And so that is a big piece of it as well. Before they jump into a report or a dashboard or some sort of knowledge product, you know, what is it? How are they going to use it? How will it benefit them at the end of the day? But also too, yeah, pulling out some of the objectives and nuggets, because sometimes, quite frankly, that might be all they need sometimes, or they just do a flash at the training material itself. So we're doing a lot of that, I think, communicating in different channels in different ways. So the use of Slack, you're going to communicate differently about a particular resource there than you would perhaps an intranet web page, for instance, to what you would deliver maybe in a workshop or a presentation. So constantly drawing on, yeah, kind of communications all the way through that. I think a lot of knowledge management folks have some element of communications because you're always out there selling it or writing about things. So that's part of the thread.
Nice. And now you're invoking the combination of KM and learning. And of course, there's this phrase learning at the point of need. And we talk about knowledge at the point of need as well. But I love your point that different people learn or figure out how to act in different ways. Some want to take the course, some want to read the manual, others want to interact with somebody over Slack and get the quick and dirty answer, whatever it might be. Does that all fall within your purview? Because the lines of KM, if you're doing it right, are really fuzzy. So where are you leading and where are you maybe collaborating with somebody in learning and performance group or collaborating with somebody over in operations? How's that work?
Right. Well, yes, I'm not a learning and development expert. That is for sure. But I think just from the work that I did years ago at an organization on facilitation and adult learning kind of always informed the way that I work. Always being mindful of those different modes. And what I'm doing, what's blurring the line with learning right now is really what I'm calling learning equity. You can take it in a lot of different directions, getting into the learning content and how you shape it. But first off, do people even know where to go or what's out there within an organization to learn, to improve themselves, but also learn for the organization, you know, for their partners, you know, for the field learning. So at a base level, I've been working on trying to surface or elevate all the different kinds of learning opportunities that are available through the foundation, inside and outside. But again, within those learning opportunities, when they find them, kind of doing some context setting. What is the learning? What are they going to get from it? What are the associated materials? And then you could eventually take that even a step further. You know, when people do workshops or learning sessions, do they understand that they should kind of put out their learning objectives and then shape an agenda that gets to those? And then they're letting people know all along the way, this is what you're learning. Hey, this is again what you're learning again. And at the end, this is what you should have taken away. So it is very much of a blurred line. Knowledge management is a thread throughout everything, and it bumps into learning because you're surfacing knowledge and information for people to do better learning. So it's kind of a natural outgrowth to think about, okay, well, how are people absorbing it? How can we improve upon that?
I completely agree. And I'm actually very happy with those lines being fuzzy. To me, effectively, any piece of knowledge that gets captured is a learning opportunity, right? It's an opportunity for somebody then to learn from that knowledge, maybe not act on it. Maybe it'll be something where they say, you know what, I actually disagree with this. I want to raise an alternative view. Or, you know, one of the best things that can happen in an organization is that somebody actually shares something that's incorrect. And you then have that opportunity to correct the person to ensure they're not doing something wrong. So knowledge created in digital forms being surfaced in all these different ways is effectively a great outcome, regardless of whether somebody acts on it or not. There's my hypothesis or my thesis statement for the day.
Love it.
You, I think, are aligned with that because you also mentioned knowledge capture interviews. Tell me about that.
Well, it's happened differently in different organizations, you know, that I've worked with. oftentimes knowledge captures happen at the end of someone's tenure. And, you know, at the foundation, we're going to try to do better than that and kind of hitting people at least during their milestones, you know, throughout their time at the organization, because it's always often a scramble when at the end, when if someone's been with an organization for a long time, you want to take advantage of that knowledge while they're there. So you can go back and ask questions and draw on it and learn from it, not at the very end when you could have been acting on it, say, 5 years earlier. So there's different lines of questioning. John Hovel has a great knowledge retention process that he does with groups as well that I would love to try myself, where it's more about everyone asking on a team, this person who's departing or shifting, a number of questions, everything that they want to know. And then it's kind of sorting and prioritizing and grouping those questions so that they actually have an action plan growing out of that. It's not just an interview that sits on the shelf and some people draw on it. It's really actionable. And I always tried to make my interviews that I did, you know, before always actionable. I'd always deliver it, make sure that the person was okay. I would edit it afterwards and make it available to the team and try to do so while the person was still at the organization so that they, again, could ask those questions and act on them. And again, trying to do it so that you're interviewing people at all levels of the organization, not just leadership. Like I said, there's too many good nuggets of wisdom out there and at all different levels that you'd be missing otherwise.
I want to restate something you said, Carrie, because I think it's actually, it seems really simple, but it's such an important point. So frequently when an organization focuses on knowledge transfer, they're justifying it by saying, we don't want the knowledge to leave the organization with the person does, right? I mean, how many times have you heard that? But you just offer a really, I think, insightful other reason that's actually a better reason, which is, hey, if this person's an expert, then we don't want to wait for them to leave to have their knowledge shared.
Right.
That knowledge doesn't actually become more valuable when they leave. We want this stuff out there throughout their entire career. And it seems so simple, even saying it, but it's, I think, a really important point that a lot of organizations don't consider in the value of knowledge capture and sharing. So I really like that. I also totally agree. There are, I think, wonderful opportunities to capture knowledge from people at all levels within an organization, including people that are new. You talked about milestones. A milestone could be somebody's first month on the job. And part of what you're capturing is what they struggled with, what they wish they had access to, what they wish that they had been able to learn faster or easier or better. Talk to me about those milestones. How do you know when it's the right time to interview somebody?
Yeah, that's a really good question because we're kind of determining that right now on the spot. But I love the idea of interviewing someone who is maybe a month or 3 months into their role, because the onboarding process or the orientation process, you could make it or break it for someone or the organization taking advantage of the person's, you know, talents, their knowledge. So making sure that you're getting it right, that it's not, you know, like a fire hose of information, but how are you metering that out? And I've designed different processes for that, where it's check-in points, mentorships, you know, that are set up, check-ins, shadowing folks, you know, who are on the road as part of that. But I think that's critical. It could be annually. That could get overwhelming. So we're still figuring that out. But we were thinking about, oh, they're 3 year, they're 5 year, they're 10 year anniversary. But more and more, it's a truncated amount of time that you have folks, right? So you have to make it more frequent because that's critical. But yeah, we're kind of trying to figure out that rhythm right now. So we don't have the solution quite yet, yeah. But we're working towards it.
Oftentimes we talk in terms of high value moments of knowledge capture. And what I find is that those tend not to align with a calendar. It's when a project milestone gets hit, when somebody maybe gets promoted, when you conclude a project, when you've delivered something major, but it's also when something goes wrong. And I love framing interviews from that perspective of, hey, what's the biggest thing you messed up this month or this year? There's a ton of learning in those moments too.
Right.
Have you approached the conversations from those perspectives as well? Pulling back the curtain on the fact that we only talk about good stuff instead of focusing on how you can help your colleagues in the organization by talking about what went wrong.
Oh, definitely. Past interviews, but it also brings to mind too, it's not just maybe the one-on-one person interviewing, but like you said, after action reviews, before action reviews, that you get a lot right there because oftentimes when you're just interviewing them, they start forgetting all that they've done. So it's when they're in the moment with the project, they're in the context of it, and it could really be able to glean a lot more in that moment than perhaps if it was just a dedicated reflecting on your past year. They are in the moment, they're remembering it. So I remember at one organization, after action reviews were dreaded. They were led by leadership, and it was an exercise in really blaming people. It was really
Oof.
pretty horrible. And I came in and they would produce these big reports, 20-page reports coming out of them. Again, no one reading them, but everyone terrified. And so it took me a long time to socialize that after action reviews are not that. And if anything, maybe leadership shouldn't be involved in those conversations. If people are that timid, we want candid, real feedback about what's working, what's not, because at the end of the day, it's not about us. It's about resettling refugees. It's about kids. It's about helping communities, whatever the cause is, right? Getting yourself out of the way. So I feel like, in combination with doing knowledge capture interviews, those after actions or reflection sessions throughout, they're built in. These people are built in throughout all the way. So it could be another way to approach it. It's in combination, these after action reviews or reflection sessions and interviews with a person one-on-one. I used to ask in interviews too, what's your happiest moment or your best story from your time here? To, what was maybe, something that was sad or something that was disappointing that came up that you wish you could do a course correction on? And people are totally willing to do it because, again, they want the organization, they want the mission to succeed. And it could be different sector to sector. I don't know. I've always been in kind of social sector, but usually people have the best intentions to help the organization.
I think, especially given the power of your mission, there's no question that everybody's swimming in the same direction. KM can actually save the world in your part of the world. So that's pretty
There you
incredible.
go.
You referenced something, and we talk about that in terms of peaks and valleys. I actually learned it from my sister. She would do it with her kids at the end of a school week. What was your best? What was your peak? What was your lowest moment? What was your valley? And they would talk about both. And I've brought that into EK, and it sounds like you're doing something similar. I think there's a lot of power in those questions and the specificity of the questions. So you're generating all this great content, all of this great knowledge and learning. What do you do with it? How do you get it to the right people?
It's not easy. I mean, we have all these tools at our disposal, right? So we have a file repository. We have, an intranet to guide people. We have Slack. We have, messaging that way. I think the best way we're now, working on, metadata and tagging and whatnot. We have AI that's, of course, surfacing for everyone, how to make things easier that way. Knowledge management, I think, is really cool in a way because we have our finger on the pulse of what's going on across the organization. We have the ear of a lot of people, or they also talk to us quite a bit. So we're always looking for opportunities of where we can improve things, even if we're not running that particular system, for instance, like, say, our organizational intranet. Now, how can we find ways to shape entry points where people can find the knowledge and information faster? We're always using like our Slack channel, for instance, to give advice, tips, to also solicit questions, from people, kind of monitoring what people are asking for, search terms, things of that kind in different repositories, paying attention to the different ways and forms that you can make information even more available. But yeah, it's hard because it's such an information overload. But we like to think that we're able to, if we can't find it, we know the people that do. So that's another thing with knowledge management. We're always great people connectors. We can always point you to who to go to learn more. That's just kind of a walking, talking expertise directory as well to get people in the right hands.
You are the human search engine. You've hit this, you've listed a bunch of technologies. You got, file repository, Slack, intranet, AI. Similar to the question I asked about where learning stops and KM starts, what role does KM at WK Kellogg Foundation play in those technologies? Are you doing the information architecture? Are you leading the content governance? Do you own the technologies or are you partnering with IT? What are those lines within the organization?
Right. In all of my organizations, so I'm a full-time contracted knowledge management analyst with the WK Kellogg Foundation. So I do a lot of the support of different systems, But yes, I can say that for different systems, just as an example, from a former organization, and then I'll speak again to W.K. Kellogg Foundation, but our organizational intranet at one organization and our partner community, we shaped out the information architecture, all with program staff. Those who know the work are embedded in the work, interviewing and making sure that we are doing focus group research with the people who are going to be using the communities. So yes, we running those, but really then handing it off back to the programs in that particular instance to run and use, and us providing guidance along the way. Certain systems, yes, we help to shape and design, but a lot of it is about people using a particular environment and then shaping it out to be their own. Notion is an example of that. You can create and set up your own little workspace or home to whatever you like. We can give guidance and support along those lines and the ways in which we're using it. Same with tools like Slack. We consider that to be a learning, knowledge sharing platform. There's different ways you can use it and perhaps be more effective than others. So we always feel like we're trying to give self-service and empower others to use the systems as much as possible. And we're always advisors. A lot of systems we don't own, nor do we really want to, but we would love to be consulted and give advice on the direction, how things could be searched or given visibility better than if they didn't have us involved. So we try not to be like owners or behind all things, but really be kind of internal consultants in that regard, if that makes sense.
It certainly does. And I'm hearing you use we. I'm assuming that's not the royal we, that you're part of a team. Can you talk a little bit about your team? How big is it? Where does it sit within the organization?
Yeah. I'll speak, you know, more broadly, but with the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, Alicia and myself, we're part of a knowledge, data, and learning team. And it's, I think, five of us, but we work on the different facets. There's the two of us working on knowledge management. We have a team working on data sense making. And then we have me that is an emerging area working on learning, really creating that access to learning. There's other folks in the organization that are working on learning and impact and evaluating that and how we can get it. We're just trying to support, how do you access it? Where do you go to find some of those real nuggets of wisdom, like best practices or lessons learned? And in other organizations, I've managed teams, and we were very small. Others, I was just by myself. I managed to find knowledge management, and my organization was kind enough to listen to me talk about it enough. They're like, well, why don't you give it a try? That sometimes can be the beauty of small nonprofits. You can do a lot of different things and run with things. But yes, we have a team. So it's not just one person flying the flag, which is great. But I've done it by myself too. And it can be difficult, but it always depends on the type of organization and the problem that you're trying to solve for, right? So knowledge management is going to call for different resourcing and different objectives depending on what you're trying to do.
So it sounds like there's five. Where in the organization do you report up to? Our listeners tend to be curious. Is it teamed with learning? Are you reporting up to the COO? Like, what's the line?
So we are one of three teams that is part of a larger group called Information Systems and Technology. So we are within like the IT umbrella.
Great.
And another team focuses on information and security, another on enterprise systems. And then there's our team. So it's interesting always to hear where it sits always.
KnowledgeCast is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge, the world's largest dedicated knowledge management consultancy. From training to benchmarks, strategy, design, prototyping, and all the way to enterprise-level implementations, Enterprise Knowledge wants to be your services partner. Spanning the fields of knowledge management, knowledge graphs, data, learning, advanced content management, and enterprise artificial intelligence, contact us at info@enterprise-knowledge.com to discuss how we can support you.
Well, I also love the fact that you mentioned part of the team is focused on data. And I believe the term used was data sense making. And certainly with AI, but even before then, we have been really excited to see knowledge and data coming together as what used to be two very separate fields. But through ontologies and increasingly knowledge graphs and now AI, they're really smashing together in exciting ways. Can you talk a little bit about what y'all are doing with that?
Well, we're just at the beginning, starting to explore its capabilities, as is, I think, most people. I host a community of knowledge management and learning professionals, practitioners across the social sector. And we were actually hosting some webinars just showing different AI tools and their different capabilities, but also showing how some of us are in the early stages of the application and what that looks like. So that, I think we're still in the figuring out phase. We definitely see its capability, but also to the read on the different folks that I'm in with this community, we're all at the same page. So we find it hugely exciting, but we don't have any solutions quite yet.
Okay, fair. To me, some of the most exciting pieces is where we're moving from findability to discoverability, where we can start assembling answers and pushing those answers to the right people. And it sounds like with all the work you're doing in generating great content, that's the next logical step.
Yeah.
You mentioned AI, so it sounds like you're already potentially experimenting with some tools. Can you speak to that or too early?
Yeah. Well, one thing I think, I mean, the search and discoverability obviously is a huge gap for us with AI, but also too, I think being able to have so many more new perspectives, new knowledge contributors, folks who may have felt timid and never published anything or really shared much because maybe their writing skills weren't the best and they were kind of embarrassed about that. I think it's a huge opportunity for people to kind of just draw upon all kinds of new perspectives rather than the folks that have always been out there speaking the same talk. I think AI, the capability to help with your tone, help people who have perhaps English as a second language, for instance, I think of that side of it too, which I think is exciting. But yeah, different tools. I mean, AI is popping up everywhere. It's kind of like whack-a-mole. I call it that. Every tool like Notion has AI that you now is for fee, but it's a Miro. I was just speaking to how you can cluster notes or theme things automatically, which is amazing. To ChatGPT, of course. We're all navigating and figuring it out and using it in different ways, but yeah, I can say different things like improve my writing or shorten this. I always write first because I always feel like, well, that would be cheating if I didn't put something else, you know, out there for it to respond to, right? But yeah, we're definitely in it and experimenting with it and looking at all the different ways that it can be used, but also to being cautious, just like everyone else. Very new, but I'm excited about it.
Wonderful. Fantastic. So let's shift gears a little bit. Tell our listeners a little bit about how you got into the field in the first place. KM is, for many, a circuitous route. How did you find your way to where you are now?
Completely by accident. I was at a communications network conference years ago, and this communications network is for communications professionals across philanthropy. And it was an open space set up, and I didn't have a workshop in the time slot that I wanted to, anything I wanted to go to. And I bumped into this workshop that was titled Knowledge Management, something, something. It's like, well, I'll just go check it out. I have nothing else to do. That was it. I mean, just sitting in that workshop, I was like, oh my gosh, all the light bulbs went off and more. I actually went on to co-present with the folks who were presenting that workshop at another conference later down the road as kind of like a beginner knowledge management organization. But I got into it that way through communications because my organization at the time, we always learned and debriefed all the time and had best practices because all the tools that we were developing to help bring people together in public dialogue focused on solving thorny issues always was based on what we were learning in real time, with communities, what was working, what was not. And we were constantly iterating, on our tools and advice, our technical assistance. And we did a good job of sharing in real time, but it wasn't really like kind of organized or saved in ways that had longevity. And also too, at the same time, we had a number of people who were retiring from the foundation, had years and years of experience. And I saw that, I was like, oh gosh, I got to do something about that, right? We're a small organization. And then also too, we had a long storied history about how we arrived at centering our work on racial equity, that, all public issues needed to center on racial equity. And we had new people coming into the organization. They thought the racial equity lens was a new thing when it stemmed back to the riots, in LA, all the way back then. And so I was like, we need to do a historical timeline to really kind of put this into perspective for folks. So that was a huge learning and wonderful experience that, and I credit the organization to letting me do it and run with it. because then I went on to other organizations to do knowledge management. But yes, it came accidentally through a communications conference.
Do you remember who was the speaker? Who was that person that inspired you?
Oh, geez. You know, I can't remember. No one had knowledge management in their titles. That's the other thing. I don't feel like you have to have knowledge management anywhere in your title. I think it's even better if it's just threaded into the work that you do to influence it. But I honestly think it was the Hogg Center at University of Texas and Social Ventures. I could be completely wrong. It was so long ago. But yes, Bruce Trachtenberg, though, was at the time the executive director of the Communications Network, so I can credit him.
Excellent. Good. So as I already noted, on the board behind you, it says KM Strategy and Plan. Can you share with our listeners, what's your KM Strategy and Plan? What's on the roadmap? What are y'all planning to do? You've already mentioned deconstructed content, knowledge capture interviews, you're playing with AI, you're working with the learning group to make lessons learned more accessible. You're doing a ton. What else haven't we heard about yet? What's on that roadmap?
Well, they roll up into higher level, you know, objectives for knowledge management. And that's critical too, right? They have to align with the larger organizational strategy. Otherwise, you're just putting out activities and shiny baubles that no one quite understands what the connection is or why you're doing it. So objectives that we have are, you know, really kind of fostering that knowledge sharing culture. And so a lot of that has to do with educating people more about the importance of knowledge sharing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, how they can get involved in doing it, from communities of practice to our assistance in helping them with their file management, with their chapter learning, for instance, to then, you know, organizing our knowledge and information so it's effective for search and discovery. Putting out different suggested foldering and file naming structuring, for instance, and creating a way, an easy way for teams all across the organization to share their internal knowledge products. Right now, I think they're tucked away in different places. So, you know, encouraging that just as a, for instance, as a building block, but the metadata, the tagging, and making sure the information is there. And then it's the optimization of that search and discovery that activities fall under. So those are things like AI, and we're very at the beginning of that. But how are we optimizing that search, you know, through faceted enterprise search, but also drawing in AI? So those are some of the like big bucket areas I like to think of more because, yeah, you have to have that all the activities and make it manageable too. We keep on hacking back because you can't do all. But one thing that I think threads through it is we're really working hard to improve what is knowledge products or a resource pipeline out into the world, ensuring that what we're putting out there as knowledge products, but also grantees and partners are making it out there far and wide. So everyday people like students, academics, community members can take advantage of everyone's knowledge and create positive change out there. So that's a big thrust of our work as well, which is cool.
That's really exciting to hear. I mean, especially given your mission, but really for any organization, I'm always thrilled to hear how KM is translating to the public face, how the knowledge is getting out of the organization and to others. And so from your line of work, you can think about South-South collaboration and all these wonderful organizations that aren't really competitive. You're all trying to do the same thing and you have a wonderful opportunity to share that knowledge. What's the medium? Are you just sharing on the website? Is there a clearinghouse? Like, how are you doing it?
So this is a big advertisement for Candid's Issue Lab. Yes, I love Issue Lab. The folks there are great. We have a great partnership with them. And we're trying to create this larger movement with other foundations to join on to, you know, Issue Lab, ensuring that their knowledge products and their partners' knowledge products are on there. So yeah, it's a great partnership. Issue Lab just extends the searchability, the discoverability beyond what any grantee or partner can make available on their websites or even for WK Kellogg or other organizations. So it's just been such a great resource. And so we're just trying to work with different workflows and massage them so that even more make them into the world, into the hands of folks who can do social good.
Phenomenal. What's that process look like? A lot of organizations are a little looser internally, but the moment that something goes outside the firewall, they put more governance around it. How do you make sure that something is ready to be shared or should be shared outside of the organization?
The resources have an internal, you know, review process, and there's kind of coaching along the way when different knowledge products get developed. But there is criteria for us to have knowledge products on Issue Lab, you know, that they're publicly free and available to the public, that they cite sources. And, you know, right now it's that it also carries the name of the foundation. That's another criteria, just so that we can, as a service to grantees and partners, make that information available more broadly. But yeah, there are folks that are going out there and doing it on their own as well. And Issue Lab also has their criteria too for knowledge products going out into the world, or what criteria they need to meet so that they can be uploaded. And then they do their own review too as well. But yeah, great resource. Highly recommend them.
Good. If you want, we'll please share a link and we'll put it in your Knowledge Cast episode on our website.
Absolutely. Great.
Tell me a little bit about what you're most excited about within the KM field. And you can't say AI. Everybody's saying AI these days. Set that aside for a minute. What really gets you out of bed in the morning? What are you most excited about?
I don't know. I love the creativity. Knowledge management, it's a thread, you know, throughout everything that an organization does. I know you have to draw parameters around that, but there's just constantly new ways to help people, you know, find and discover the knowledge that they need and shape it in a way that they can digest. So I think the creativity, the permeability of knowledge management to work across different functions, the fact that you can be this internal consultant, really, I think is really cool. I love it. And you can take it in so many different directions. So it's not new, but I feel like that's what does it for me, that you can take it in a lot of different directions.
I think that's great. I think about that in terms of the ampersand, right? It's KM and learning, KM and data, KM and global health. I mean, all of the ways that you can mash KM together with these different fields keeps our job very exciting and very interesting. So what advice would you give to somebody who wants to grow up to be you?
They want to grow up to be me. I like that. I would get out there and talk to people who are doing it, rather in their title or not. That's what I did in the very beginning. Once I, again, after I stumbled into this workshop and came back, was like, wow, I have to do this. I started talking to people, just informational calls to find out what flavors, what did knowledge management look like in their organization? How were they doing it? What challenges were they grappling with? It's a chameleon. It takes on a different color wherever you go to any organization, what problem you're solving for. So that was a really big education. And, you know, knowledge management folks are just so open and sharing all the time. I mean, just even the community that I host, it's great that people want to share out what they're doing, what's keeping them up at night, what projects they're working on, and getting feedback. So that would be my advice. Go and talk to folks and see if, is it interesting? Is it taking you into a direction you want to go? And plus, that's also going to be your network. I found myself going back, you know, to those people that I interviewed with questions after the fact or gnarly challenges that I knew that they had probably run across. Why reinvent the wheel? So they also could serve as your network.
Nice. I think that's a great answer. And it's a consistent one on the show. We get a lot of people praising the community. And it's really true. I mean, if you're going to be in the field of KM, you're not going to be a knowledge hoarder, right? If you are, there's a pretty serious issue. So it is always nice to see how open people are. Even, you know, I'm a consultant. We are competitive with other consultancies, and yet there really is that community and the camaraderie across the board. And that's always pretty nice to see. You have several times over the course of this conversation invoked this user-centered philosophy, engaging your stakeholders, meeting them where they are, ensuring that they have the right understanding and the right footing. And I've loved all the words that you've used around that. If you've got this like one piece of advice of you must do this to make a KM program successful, is it that, or is there more there that you want to share?
I think that's definitely key. But I would say leadership in the organization has to get what you're trying to do. They have to see purpose in it. They have to see the benefits in doing it, because others in the organization are looking up to them to find out, like, should I be investing time in doing what she's telling me to do, or guiding me to do, or selling me on what to do? So I really advocate that. And that's really important. I was just going to say what I had said earlier, too, was ensuring that knowledge management is strategic. that you're shaping it in such a way, speaking to it in such a way that it is strategic, so that leadership is listening to that. They understand that. They're not just thinking you're trying to spin off something new, different, or a technology, which oftentimes, unfortunately, is associated with knowledge management. So to me, the technology is, at the end of the day, it's definitely a piece of the picture. It's the people, process, technology, and the strategy that encircles it. But I would say you have to have them involved. But yeah, putting yourself out there too. I always said this one organization, I opted to be in a cubicle right on the main thoroughfare of the floor of the organization, whereas my one other partner opted to have a closed door office. And I always thought that, I don't know, she shot herself in the foot in that regard, because that didn't get a whole lot done. I was there to talk, doing suggestive selling. When I was trained as a high school student at Shoney's as a waitress, it was all about suggestive selling. Like, I could talk to people and listen to them as well, like what their problems were. So I was very easily accessible, because you have to be. It's very easy to forget about knowledge management or not do it. So we just have to kind of keep it front and center.
So Carrie, that's a first. That's the first time on Knowledge Cast that anybody's ever talked about the training they received at Shoney's helping them in their KM career. So
Medina, Ohio, icy cold Coca-Cola, not just a Coke. And so you got to put the shine on knowledge management too. The Shoney's way.
Icy cold KM. I got it. Understood. So you hit on a key point here. Leadership's got to understand KM. They've got to value it. They've got to prioritize it. They've got to model the right behavior. I am sure some of our listeners at this moment are saying, well, great, but mine don't. So what advice would you give them? How do you get leadership to understand the value of KM if perhaps they've been burnt by a failed initiative, or they just aren't prioritizing it in the way that you think they should? Where do you take them?
Yeah, it is about creating kind of short-term wins, identifying some things that are low lifts in the organization that you could solve for, and showing what it can actually do, but also showing how it can benefit all areas of the organization, giving real life examples, not just saying it in concept, but what will it do for programming, for instance? What's a thing or two that you've identified or others have helped you identify? And you're like, wow, you could do X, Y, and Z to show for it. And you want permission to go forward. So I think oftentimes it's just showing proof of what it can do, being allowed to do it. And sometimes you ask for permission after, but you go out and you prove it in a small way, and you kind of build from there and build momentum. But there's no easy answer, unfortunately. Every leader is different, but the proof is in the pudding if you can take something from concept to showing something actionable. But identifying those challenges too, listening to people across the organization to find out what the challenges are, and then kind of co-creating, well, maybe these are some viable approaches that we could take, you know, to solve for it. So that you've also fed back to leadership, these are the things that you're seeing as challenges or as problems, and this is the step that you want to take. Sometimes they don't know that those problems exist because they're so busy being the leaders. So surfacing those, I think, is a huge step as well.
Fantastic, and great advice to part ways on as well. I really appreciate that. Carrie Boron, KM Analyst at WK Kellogg Foundation. Keep up the good work and keep up the wonderful mission. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you so much.
For our listeners, thanks for joining this episode of Knowledge Cast. To check out more, please visit our website at enterprise-knowledge.com. Thanks, everybody.